Welcome to today's special podcast talking about the Midwest Lacrosse Conference Tournament. I'm Steve Schar, joined here by the fan radio broadcast voice, Matt Menzel, to discuss the Concordia Wisconsin Falcons against the MSU Raiders, along with the Aurora Beloit matchup and possibly who the Falcons could face. Matt, let's get into it first. How the bracket shapes up. The Falcons secured the number one seed in the MLC tournament via a tiebreaker, a three-way tie with Aurora and Beloit. MSU took the fourth seed. Were you surprised that the Falcons locked up that one seed 2 weeks ago? Did you think that was going to happen?
Well, absolutely not. And no knock at any of the guys on this Falcon roster, but you go back 2 weeks ago, and we mentioned it on a couple of the broadcasts. At that point, realistically, you knew the team would probably be in the tournament, but as a number three or number four seed. And again, it was all going back to that loss at Beloit back on March 25th. But no, all of a sudden you go to Aurora and go figure, pick up a victory against the reigning four-peat conference champ at the time, and changes everything. And then you come back home and you get Cornell and you take care of business despite some lousy conditions here at Fitting Field. And then go figure, get the tiebreaker on top of it all. But what an opportunity now for the Falcons, a seventh-year program, first ever regular season championship, a number one seed. Now everything has to come through Mequon.
The tiebreaker you talk about came down to the last game of the regular season. The Falcons had the upper hand. They needed Aurora to defeat Beloit. Didn't matter what the score was. And Aurora knocked off Beloit. But Aurora needed to defeat Beloit by two or more goals to get the two seed. Otherwise, a one-goal win would have knocked them down to the three. So for the Spartans, good for them that they won by a bunch more than two or three to get the two seed, so they at least can get a home game in that first round. Matt, you look at that Aurora matchup. You talked about how important it was to get that win down in Aurora because the Falcons in eight tries before that hadn't defeated the Spartans. And when I had first looked at the score, I'm like, oh, great, the Falcons won. We needed that because it gives us the inside track on that one seed. And then I started combing through the numbers. And you look at that game, Aurora won 17 of 23 faceoffs, outshot the Falcons 45-19, 34-16 in ground balls. And you start wondering, well, how the heck did that happen? But it just so happened to be one of those games where the possession valuing the ball was so important. And Garrett Wolford played extremely well with 18 saves in that game.
Yeah, you're not kidding. When you look at Garrett Wolford and what he was able to do with that 18-save performance, you know, one of those games in which he had at least five saves per quarter. But you're right, up and down, the box score, everything, at least on paper, favored Aurora. Shot differential of 45-19, 27-13 in shots on goal. But to the Falcons' credit, it was one of those games, okay, it was tied at one after one. Falcons came out, outscored the Spartans 6-3 in that second, had control at halftime, but then all of a sudden Aurora gained momentum, pulls off a shutout in the third, and you're thinking, great, 7-7 after three. But again, to the Falcons' credit, as opposed to kind of waving the white flag going, oh, great, here we go again. We've been in this situation before in tight games with Aurora. They find a way to sneak out a victory. Able to come through. Players stepped up big, as they have all year long. Yet Aiden Connolly, who's been a nice spark here as a sophomore this year, that came through with a big-time goal. But also you had Kellen Asmussen, who put the finishing touches on the victory with a goal with 1 second left in regulation. He's had an outstanding senior campaign, both as a facilitator and a finisher. But it was just one of those games where it just seemed like the Falcons made the most of the few opportunities they had. And then you look at defense and Garrett Wolford. The defense and Garrett Wolford have been on pretty much on all year long.
Yeah, you mentioned Garrett Wolford and the defense. In a preseason interview with head coach Mike Fahey, he talked, defense is going to be our strong suit this year. We are going to be all in the backs of the defense. They're going to have to carry us, and they've done that a lot this year. The program is on pace to set the single-season record for fewest goals allowed per game, which you can see that going up and down the box score, a lot of giving up two goals, three goals, and they won big. But that offense is really, once we got to conference play, really stepped up and kind of such surprised and shocked a lot of people. Me personally, the passing, when they get so much closer to the goal, is so on point and pass, catch, shoot right away. There's no stutter step, set yourself up. It's as soon as that ball hits the pocket of the net, bam, right in the back of the net.
No, you're right. And you look at the team, at least coming into the weekend, was number one of the conference in clear percentage. Overall, it's a team that that just so many different players have stepped up. And you talked about what Coach Fahey said during the preseason where the defense trying to buy some time for the offense, yet go figure the season opener. I don't care if it's Dubuque or whoever they play, but in this case it was Dubuque. It was a 19-2 victory. The offense really set the tone from the get-go as well. And you've had now 26 different players score goals. You've had over now 30 guys with points. There have been 38 that have played. So everybody, even on the defensive side, has gotten involved in the offense. And you talk about, you know, the passing and the shooting. Well, even in some games, like against MSOE, a team that, again, they will see coming up in the Midwest Lacrosse Conference Tournament semis, that was a game that, you know, they dictated the pacing. They dictated the tone. They forced MSOE to play their style. It's a team that doesn't force the issue either. They don't just shoot shots, take shots. They work it around, and they try to create those shooting lanes. And it's been a team that just has been very selective. And, again, they've made the most of the opportunities they've been presented.
They have. And the one key important thing on both sides of the ball is currently Kellen Asmussen leads the team with 65 points. James Warner, a senior, with 40. Then you go down, Aiden Conley, he's a sophomore. Colin Rayleigh's a senior. Kaminsky's a sophomore. Gregory's a sophomore. Berman's a freshman. Donlin's a sophomore. So you have a sprinkled in of your upperclassmen that are doing the leadership things they need to do, but it's the underclassmen who are getting involved, getting the scoring and the defense to cause turnovers, getting the experience, especially in a season like this where you're the one seed, everything comes through home, getting that experience for the future.
Well, how nice has it been that you look at some of the games and, again, look at the opposition, but there have been some lopsided affairs. And so Coach Fahey's had the luxury of playing upwards of 38 guys in a matchup. And it just seems like, and again, some of this has to do with the opposition, but there has not been a drop-off or much of a drop-off, no matter who has been coming and going in that lineup on the fly. And again, it's developed as the season's gone on, but you're right. You have the seniors who have been able to lead the way, but again, sophomores, a couple of freshmen in there, juniors, they've all fit their role. They've all done their job, and it's been nice, just a nice collection of talent that's been able to put it all together. And go figure, here we are now sitting here in the first week of May talking about a regular season conference championship and, again, the tournament road coming through MEC 1.
And some of those games you talked about this season, the Falcons have won by, let's look here, 21, 11, 6, 24, 17. I mean, there's been a bunch of games where things have kind of gotten out of control. And that's what happens when you get to the top of the conference. That bottom half really feels like there's so much of a separation. And the Falcons, in those games against the bottom half, have really put it on early, lit up the scoreboard, which has allowed Coach Mike Fahey, especially in the second quarter, to really start subbing in and clearing the bench out, as opposed to sometimes you see a coach will wait till the fourth quarter, a couple minutes left. Here you go, get a couple minutes for your experience.
What I like, too, is most of those blowouts have occurred here at home. So you have the confidence already of being able to take care of business on your field. But you're right. You know, you look at what has developed in some of those matchups and how the Falcons have gone about their business. What I like, too, is, you know, maybe in years past we've seen them kind of allow some teams to hang around, maybe build some confidence a little bit. They're not going to pull off the upset. Let's be realistic. They're not going to win the game, but you give them a little bit of hope. And in this case, for the Falcons, it's one of those where you mentioned a lot of these matchups, they've been able to take care of business right from the get-go, from start to finish. They've been able to take it to the opposition, not allowing them much hope. And I still think one of my favorite results this season was the shutout against Fontbonne, where, again, they put the pressure on. They did not take their foot off the gas pedal. Fifth shutout in program history.
You had a stat on Sunday in the Cornell game, which, by the way, I've seen you thawed out from that game. It was 40 raining.
Took a couple of days.
It was not pleasant. What was the numbers you had from that game, if you can remember? Falcons goal separation at home. It was like 118.
Well, going into that game, it was 105 to 16. 105 to 16. Now you throw in the matchup there against Cornell, and I mean, my goodness, I mean they've taken it to the opposition again at home. And granted, the way the home schedule played out, you did play some of the bottom feeders of the Midwest Lacrosse Conference. But as I've said on the broadcast, I don't care who's on the schedule. You still have to go out there and play. And you still have to go out there and put up numbers. And again, this team, no matter who's been out there, again, has been able to do just that.
And the Falcons have taken care of business quite often at home. And they defeated MSOE earlier in the season at home on April the 12th. It was a 12-1 final score. MSOE scored 3 minutes into that game, and I would think, remembering back on it, the first 3 or 4 minutes, it was a little slower, and MSU scored, and there was this real brief thought in your mind of, this is going to be a pretty good game, and then the Falcons scored and scored and scored, and then it next thing you know, it was 5-1 at halftime, 8-1 at the end of the third, and 12-1, and it was over.
Well, if you recall, both those teams going into that matchup were tied for third, so it was an important game, and I called it, you know, that being the eighth meeting all the time between the two programs, I call it the most important meeting all time between the two, because in the past, there was a difference between Concordia and MSOE, and now here you have a meeting where third place, sole possession on the line, and you're right, you know, the first couple of minutes, MSOE gets that first goal 3 minutes in, and you're thinking, uh-oh, because MSOE came out, and they kind of had this amped-up feel, a lot of chirping. I mean, they were ready to go. They were pumped. This was going to be their opportunity to finally knock off the big bad Falcons, and yet after that, the defense able to hunker down, and Garrett Wolford able to make save after save, and limiting MSOE to 21 more shots the rest of the game. Only 7 of those the rest of the way were on target. And again, a number of different players were able to step up. I think a total of 6 guys had goals, 8 had points for the Falcons, and it was a setup the rest of the way and route to that 12-1 victory.
Warren Kaminsky, Aiden Connolly, Colin Raley all had hat tricks, Kellen Asmussen with a goal and 3 assists. That's one thing Kellen has done very well this year, is he'll get his goal or two because you got to score, but he's the helping man. And then you look defensively, James Warner with 2 cost turnovers, as Ben Smith, who's the program's all-time leader in cost turnovers, and Nathan Okerman, a freshman getting into the act that day. So you had quite a few players offensively and defensively really doing what they had to do. Jack Melby had 8 ground balls, and the Falcons won 14 of 15 faceoffs. So nearly perfect. As a faceoff guy, they always say, you interviewed Beans earlier in the year, they want to be perfect on the faceoff, and they almost had it.
And I would tell you, too, that's a stat that I see as being critical to who comes out on top coming up on Wednesday in that semifinal, only because, you know, the Falcons got off to a great start to begin the year in that face-off circle with Ben Grammarosa. He went down. Next man up in this case, it was Beans, and he was able to do his part. Well, now all of a sudden, who is that face-off specialist? Because it's been kind of a mixture of the two. We've seen Grammarosa. We've certainly seen Melby out there. And it's just a matter of, okay, who's going to be out there when this game comes to call him? But then also taking care of business, because these last couple of games, they haven't been as sharp. They got better as the Cornell game went on in that face-off circle. And MSOE comes in. They're about 55% on faceoffs on the year. So this game against Concordia the first time through was kind of different from what they've become accustomed to here this season. They got a pretty good faceoff guy in Brett Laffey, the freshman from Missouri. And so I see that being key just to, I guess, sway momentum and try to gain momentum as that matchup goes on. And you better believe, you know, I still think the Falcons will take care of business with very little issue. But MSU is going to be coming here remembering what happened back on the 12th of April and realizing that they are an underdog. And a number 4 seed has never won a semifinal in Midwest Lacrosse Conference tournament history. Why not us?
A question for you, Matt. You talked face-offs. The Falcons have won 14-15 in that previous meeting against MSOE. It was Grammarosa, then it was Melby, and now the last couple of games, it's been a little bit of a mix. In your viewpoint, would you rather have a guy who's been the man all season, doing business, or kind of getting to this point where if one's not doing it, throw the other one in because they're ready to go?
I'm not Coach Fahey. I don't have his contract. I wish I did. But as far as the face-off specialist goes, I go with the hot hand. And whoever gives you the best chance to win, I keep going that direction. So maybe you start with one guy. If he all of a sudden loses 2 or 3 in a row, maybe you switch it up and see if you can't get a different result with a different guy in there and keep going back and forth until you find something that starts to work. And we saw that against Cornell. Grammarosa all of a sudden was able to win face-off after face-off a couple in a row and pretty soon able to gain momentum but also possession for the Falcons. And so I think you go that route. I think you go with the hot hand as opposed to who started the season, who finished it, because, again, it's not how you start, it's how you finish. And in this case, you're just looking for the hot hand, and you're looking to just put yourself in the best position to succeed.
And I think the one, it will never show up in the box score, it's a stat, is win or lose the faceoff. If you win the faceoff, how fast you pick the ball up and get to the goal. And then defensively, if you do lose it, how quickly can you slow down the opposition and force them to set up the offense as opposed to getting a 4-on-3 advantage or whatever the case is. I think that's going to be important, especially Wednesday, and if the Falcons win going into that championship game.
Well, it will be, and the Falcons have been pretty good this season when it comes to that transition attack and getting the ball downfield in a hurry. And what I love about the Falcons, too, when they go in transition, this is a team that, besides the fact they made tomahawks shoot it at you, is the fact that they're not afraid to do a little trick shot behind the back as well, and they've had some success in doing a little trick shot behind the back.
There's been some pretty nifty ones this year.
Absolutely.
The highlight reels.
Some pretty goals. But you're right. I think that could be critical, too, is it's just the transitional offense versus the defense as far as winning a faceoff goes. But do the Falcons try to make MSOE again play their tempo? Because the Falcons were very selective and patient back on the 12th of April. If I recall, they had a good bulk of the possession that game. Mm-hmm. They worked it around. I think the shot clock got involved a couple of times too, which you don't often see. But it was one of those games where the Falcons pretty much forced MSOE to slow it down, and therefore all this amped up energy that MSOE had all of a sudden kind of become a dud, and they kind of were lulled to sleep.
Going past Wednesday's matchup, I can kind of think that way. I think you're talking to the Falcons probably get past that game just due to the fact of what they did earlier this season. Okay, let's say that does happen. You get to Saturday. Is it Aurora or is it Beloit?
Oh, I think it's absolutely Aurora. And that's not a knock at the Beloit Buccaneers, but okay, fine. You look at some of the wins by Beloit. They had a one-goal victory against Benedictine, who was predicted to finish in the top four. They were the surprise team not to make the tournament. They finished a game back with that loss against MSOE. That only a five-goal victory against MSOE, who, yes, I know us having one of the best years they've ever had in their now eight-year program history. They beat the Falcons by a single goal, 7-6. I'd love to see that matchup again just for the sake of can they repeat that or will the Falcons get revenge? But then they only beat Cornell, a team that I thought was you know, they had some nice spots, some nice bright spots on that roster, but that was only a two-goal victory. Cornell nearly, you know, surprised Beloit earlier this season. But then you look at what happened this past Saturday to wrap up the regular season. And that game was at Beloit, where now the Buccaneers have to go to Aurora. And yes, it was 1-1 after a quarter, or 2-1 Aurora after one. They all of a sudden jumped in front 8-2 by halftime. Aurora won 14-5. And you know, we talk about the difference in the box score between Concordia and Aurora. It was kind of the same thing with Aurora and Beloit. There were some big differences when you look at shots. When you look, you know, face-offs were relatively close. I just see this, though, being Aurora being what they do best. And they have so many different potential options scoring-wise. They have the experience of having been in the tournament and having success in the tournament. I just see them, especially at home, taking care of business. You know, it's one of those where they had a meaningful game against Beloit Saturday. No problem. It's going to be a meaningful game again on Wednesday. I just don't see Beloit, who's never beaten Aurora all time, finding a way to do it in the semis. Would I be surprised if it happened? Absolutely. But I just think Aurora is a team that has too many different weapons that I just think, with their experience, they're destined to be in the championship.
I think experience is big. They won the last two conference tournament championships, went to the NCAA. Those last two conference tournament championship games, actually got past the Falcons in both those games. So you know the Falcons have the experience to get there. It's now, can they make that extra step? And I agree with you, Matt. I think Aurora gets past Beloit just based on the fact of these two numbers for you. Aurora, 292 goals this year, Beloit, 187. So it's over 100 goal difference. And I think the biggest one that was going to come into factor, and it did in the last meeting, you know, Saturday. Aurora has a 61 save percentage this year. Beloit, 46.2. That's a huge disparity in save percentage, and especially in a game that's going to come down to, you know, there's a lot of riding on the line. You know, your defense, your goalie especially, has to play as well as they can. And if your season average is 46.2 in save percentage, that doesn't bode well.
No, and Aurora's got a great goalkeeper and Tyler Lombardi, but also the problem that Beloit has, and I think every team's going to have in the Midwest Lacrosse Conference and has had for the last number of years, is, okay, you might focus on one or two guys for Aurora, but you start looking who's done what. They have a Bailey Smith, 54 goals, second best in the conference. You have Jason Koziel, 50 goals. You have Trevor McNamara, 40 goals. That's first in the conference with 38 assists. Those are three guys, and among the top three that are still active right now here in tournament play, that you have to try to slow them down one way or another. And Beloit was not able to do that, and they weren't able to do that on Saturday. And you look at a McNamara, four goals, couple of assists. Koziel, three goals and an assist. The goal for Bailey Smith against the Falcons as well. But it just there's too many pieces there, and I think it's a tough matchup for whoever, and I think even the Falcons. That was a tough matchup last Wednesday. Again, Garrett Wolford, the defense, able to find ways to offset all those shots, but I just think it's a tough matchup, and if Aurora's clicking on all cylinders, I mean, that's not even going to be a close semifinal.
Yeah, I agree. That's probably going to be possibly a 10-goal difference in that game because, you know Aurora's going to be hyped up. They're at home. They want to get back to that title game. They probably feel they should be the number one seed. You have to expect that. And in a game like that, you got to feel for Beloit because they're probably going to lay it on. Possibly. You don't know what the outcome is because you never want to throw solid predictions out there, but you have to feel that Aurora is probably going to light the scoreboard up in that one. Say that happens. Now you get Falcons-Spartans matchup on Saturday.
Whew.
11 a.m. 11 a.m.
Third straight year.
Here at Fitting Field.
No, that will be a unique matchup. And I say that because now the Concordia Falcons can say they've beaten Aurora once. Where in years past, they were hoping to beat Aurora once. So, mindsets. You know, if you're Aurora, you're obviously looking to avenge what happened in the regular season. If you're the Falcons, you have to have the confidence going in saying, hey, we've beaten them once already. Now they're coming to our place. So we got to protect our field. And you look at the last couple of years in the final, you know, regardless of what the records may say, those are some competitive games.
Oh, yeah. They've been close.
Two or three goals. So I would expect much the same. But, again, cautiously, you wonder how much with the Aurora mindset of we want to avenge what happened in the regular season, how much does that carry them through? I think they took some of their frustration on Beloit this past Saturday. I don't think there's any question. It refocused that Spartan team that, hey, it's not the Midwest Lacrosse Conference of the last couple of years. You know, teams that are now at or near our level that are able to knock us off or stay with us. And I just wonder, okay, you look at, we mentioned some of the names already of who's been able to do what for Aurora. If you're the Falcons, as a defensively strong team, how, again, do you go about maybe differently approaching some of these guys and trying to keep them from going off and having a 3-4 goal performance?
Yeah, last year, that conference tournament, it was 10-10 with 9:22 to go. Aurora scored three, and then the Falcons added another one late. Obviously, the offense is going to be important. You need to score to win. I think defensively, though, for the Falcons, I'm going to call a couple guys that I think have to step up. And it's going to be hard because Nathan Okerman's a freshman. Nathan Danz is a freshman. Some of these guys that don't have that experience, you know, Graham Oroska and Melby, and these guys that have only been around for this season or they have a full year under their belt. Now you're getting into a home championship game where the intensity's ratcheted up. The excitement's at another level. The must want to win this game goes farther than what you experience all season. And I think it's what can these younger guys do when the show comes to town? Obviously, your seniors, they'll be able to figure out how to calm themselves and handle the situation. But these younger guys, you know, do the upperclassmen talk to them ahead of time? This is what it's going to happen. Or does Coach Fahey and Scarcello, the assistant coach, you know, maybe have a little chat? You know, hey, calm yourself down a little bit. Just play the way you play and we'll be fine.
What I like is the fact this would be the championship matchup. You know, there was some talk as recently as Saturday before knowing what would happen between Aurora and Beloit. That could have been your semifinal matchup if things would have played out differently as far as Beloit and Aurora goes. But I like the fact that for a lot of these younger guys that maybe did not see a significant role on last year's squad will now have a tournament game under their belt. And again, it's against a rival, so there's going to be some emotion there. It's not against another team that, okay, you've played a couple of times each year. It's MSOE. Even though you've had their number and you've never lost to MSOE, it's still your in-state rival. They're down the street. It's a team you want to be able to beat. So I think that will help going in. But I do look at guys like Paul Fisher as being enormous or having to be enormous if you're to if the Aurora matchup happens, if you're going to pull off the upset once again. And I know it's not an upset by way of seed, but let's be honest. I mean, Aurora is probably your best number two seed in a Midwest Lacrosse Conference tournament, having, again, won this tournament now the last number of years, and they've been in the championship game the past five seasons. I think a guy like Fisher with his turnovers, he had four caused turnovers the first time the two teams play. I think he becomes enormous as well. And then obviously Garrett Wolford, I mean, he's come through in the clutch so many times. He has not played many 60-minute games, though, because of the scores being what they've been. He hasn't needed to play all 60 minutes, but I do think that he becomes enormous too, that, you know, if he gives up a goal early on, he's got to have a short-term memory and just, again, find ways to bounce back and just be him. Be who you've been in your two collegiate seasons.
And you don't want to talk it's a huge upset. It'll be a very respected game on both sides. Aurora, though, has won the conference championship tournament the last 2 years, but they've won that first NCAA game. So they have that under their belt, too, of, yes, we've done it in the tournament. We've done it also on the big tournament, too. So it's going to be an interesting week. Wednesday's matchups, Spartans hosting Beloit, and the Falcons hosting the Raiders, and we'll see what happens on Saturday, who plays who. If it does end up here on the CW campus, it'll be Fitting Field, 11 a.m. against Spartans or the Buccaneers. So thanks, Matt, for joining us today to talk about the MLC tournament. Anything else you want to add before we go?
No, I can't wait. Road go through Mequon.
All right. Appreciate it.